I know what you're thinking. I'm a bit surprised like you. After so many years, you would think a day like this would never come. Obviously, the team struggled a bit. I get it. They didn't make the playoffs. But I thought things could be turned around by next season. Unfortunately, ownership wanted to move on. I get it, I guess. But I can't believe the Seahawks moved on from Pete Carroll. Welcome, or welcome back to Spencer Speaks Sports. I think I should just run with the Pete Carroll bit. I think I'm just going to talk about Pete Carroll the entire podcast, honor the coaching legend that he is. I think that's what I'll do. As a huge Seahawks fan, I think it's only right to honor just the absolute legend in Pete Carroll. I think that's the only thing I can do. I don't even want to talk about Super Wild Card Weekend coming up. I don't even want to talk about that guy from the Patriots that moved on. I think I'm going to talk about that. Is the bit over yet or no? I don't know. I guess that's up to me. Maybe I should just keep talking about Coach Carroll, but no, that's fine. But I will definitely title the episode Pete Carroll or honoring Pete Carroll, just something like that. Maybe even throw it off with the description of the podcast. That would be pretty funny. But anyway, let's move on from that. Bill Belichick, after 24 years as the head coach of the New England Patriots, moving on to better things. Well, I hope not better things. I guess it would be all right to see him win a Super Bowl somewhere else, but I would prefer that the Patriots do that instead of Bill on another team. But that's a little down the road there. We'll worry about it later. But I think the most important thing and something that I hope was happening amongst all Patriots fans and supporters is that they were just thankful for what happened over this basically quarter of a century with this organization. You have just the perfect combination of owner and Robert Kraft, head coach and Bill Belichick, quarterback and Tom Brady that spurred this dynasty to heights that will never be reached again. There's just no way in a salary cap age and just the impatience of different organizations now, the need for success and the inability to just see how things pan out. You see it with Chicago right now. I'm sure they are the front office, and I guess the coaching staff probably involved with that too, though some of that coaching staff got fired. Anyway, just Chicago battling do we take Caleb Williams at number one overall? Do we stay there or do we stick with our top pick from a few years back in Justin Fields? Do we build around him? So just that's just an example of the battles that these organizations are facing, especially in the modern age of like, okay, we got to win now. Is this our option or do we have to do something else to put us in a better spot? So the sustained excellence that New England was able to have is, like I said, will never be repeated. So that's why you got to be thankful for what's happening. Heck, go to Dunkin' Donuts, buy a half a dozen donuts to represent the Super Bowl titles, maybe 24, two dozen munchkins to celebrate how long Belichick was the head coach. Whatever you want to do to honor it. Like I just use Dunkin' because obviously Massachusetts, Boston, and that's just the thing. But yeah, I mean, it's tough not to be sad watching that press conference. Yes, it was a mutual parting of ways, but I'm sure these guys, Kraft and Belichick, were getting tired of each other Unfortunately, but that's just kind of how it goes. Like, there's different visions of what wants to be done. I'm sure Robert Kraft and his son Jonathan Kraft want to kind of gain more control back in this organization, and this is a massive, massive step in doing that. Robert Kraft, 82 years old, I think he's, you know, understanding, accepting that this is we're getting there in terms of years I have left to be in control until eventually Jonathan Kraft takes over. And I'll get to that in a sec of why I'm not necessarily 100% in, or I guess I have some slight concerns, but I think the mutual parting of ways was, I guess, the best thing you could ask for. Like, it wasn't any type of firing. Like, to have that press conference, it was nice, nice to see. And just to go into just the final game environment, I was there, and you know, it was the snowball game. It was obviously cold. Just pretty cruddy playing conditions. It wasn't like necessarily a nice, beautiful snow. It was a little slushy and wet, and definitely a wintry mix of sorts. So not like not necessarily like a snow globe like past historic Patriots snow games have been. So to have that be the environment of Belichick's final game, and you know, he's dealing with a little bit of a sickness during the week, and he has the mask over his face, so you can't really recognize him other than just him walking down the stairs into the locker room for the final time. Just a rough environment to go out, but that's just the reality of it. Sometimes I am fortunate, even though the Patriots went 4-13 this season, to attend every home game. That shows that I'm a diehard fan, or a diehard fan for the Patriots. But yeah, just to kind of wrap it all up, is that I'm just super thankful for this era, and I'm ready to see what happens next. The succession plan is in place with Jerod Mayo being the head coach. Who knows who they may bring in for GM. Haven't really looked into that as much as I wanted to. But for now, the focus being Jerod Mayo as a new head coach. Former player of the team from 08 to 15. Joined the coaching staff as a linebackers coach in 2019. I think he's had that title for the all the 4 or 5 seasons he's been with the team. I think at some point there was talk or speculation that he may be the defensive coordinator, but I don't think he was ever officially given that title. But anyway, so when Jerod Mayo, because he was gaining interest as a head coaching candidate last offseason, the Patriots decided to bring him back, and in his contract, they decided to put language in that basically was a succession plan clause. And this is important, especially with the present day, because it allowed them to make a very quick hire to where you could have Belichick moving on from the team, the mutual parting of ways the day before, and then the next day you have Mayo being named the head coach, because the NFL, the league, was fine with that basically succession plan clause, or however you want to define it, in his contract, that so they could, the Patriots could avoid having to interview external candidates for the job. That made things very easy, and it really allows them to quickly focus on, okay, how are we going to handle the GM position? Who is going to really be the head of making these personnel decisions, player personnel decisions? So an interesting aspect of this too is that a big part of interview requirements is in regards to the Rooney Rule. And the Rooney Rule states that when there's an opening, you have to interview two minority candidates that are outside of the organization. And you could argue that this could be a controversial move as a way to avoid the Rooney Rule, a way to avoid interviewing these minority candidates. And maybe this is more controversial if the Patriots are hiring a white head coach, but because Mayo is a minority coach, a minority candidate, I think that's avoided. But it's is given the history of teams and just the lack of hiring minority coaches, it's kind of surprising that teams haven't just decided to be like, oh, hey, you know, we have this guy in one of our positions, say a coordinator, whatever it may be, maybe even an assistant GM if it's a GM role. Let's just put this contract stipulation in and we'll use it and we'll be ready to go. And I think that's more of a rarity for that to work out that way. Like, yes, I'm sure it would be great and easy for teams just to do an internal candidate. But usually it's kind of like a full clean of house, and usually teams have no choice but to go with an external candidate. So do I think this is going to be a problem in terms of contributing towards the lack of minority candidates? No, I think this is more of a rarity, but maybe it is something that ends up getting reviewed and it has to be adjusted by the league. But that's just that's something that I wanted to just get into real quickly. But I still want to highlight how I guess good I feel about this hire with Jerod Mayo. Because this is a coach who can definitely relate to the players more, I would say. Yes, Coach Belichick did a fantastic job doing that. This team bought in all the time with what Coach Belichick was doing. But I think just the generational difference, I don't think we're going to be able to fully fathom it until we actually see it. And just, I think the buy-in is still going to be there, and it could be even better because there's just, like I said, the generational gap is a little bit closer with Mayo. He's going to be the youngest head coach in the NFL at 37 years old. Belichick was or is 71 years old. So that's a big, big difference. And I think it's only a positive thing. And just keeping the culture in the building, like, I think Mayo understands that as a player and then being a coach and now being the head coach, there's not going to be a step missed with this transition. Obviously, big shoes to fill. There's no doubt about that. But I think the player buy-in, that doesn't change. So the players who are under contract already, or the players who are considering rejoining the team in free agency, it could be a no-brainer for some of these guys to be like, okay, we're going from Belichick to Mayo. This is perfect. I think this team is set up better than most people think. This defense is built. They have, with whether the draft classes the draft picks, I should say, they made over, say, the last five seasons, or just the free agent talent they've brought in, they are established to be where they were this year. The biggest thing is just building the offense, and that's likely going to happen in free agency in the draft. You would think with the third overall pick, they probably get the franchise quarterback. That's a great way to start a new era with Mayo being the head coach and whoever ends up being the GM. So getting that quarterback to kind of like fresh start, this is our guy for our new era, is big. The free agency class is very deep at wide receiver. A lot of good talent there. Heck, there's even a ton of talent and a decent amount of depth with wide receiver for the draft. When that comes up in April, free agency is in March. So I think, like, I mean, obviously I'm going to be optimistic being the Pats fan I am. But this team is closer than you think. It's kind of like, I mean, I hate to make this example, but it's kind of like the Jets. Like the Jets, you knew last season their defense was solid, like very, very good. And then when they trade and make the acquisition for Rodgers, you're like, okay, this team could be a playoff team. This team can battle with Buffalo, Miami, and New England in the division. But the expectations were varied for New England. I think that could be the same situation with New England. Now, obviously, they're not going to bring in future Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers or that caliber. Maybe they could bring in Russell Wilson if the Broncos release him. But you're going to look for probably young talent again, like I said, in the draft. Maybe like a Drake May of North Carolina. Caleb Williams is probably going to be off the board. The USC quarterback, he's probably going first overall with whatever team drafts him, Chicago or whoever trades up. Heck, maybe the Patriots trade up. I'm not sure about that, but whatever. And then another guy could be Jaden Daniels, LSU, the Heisman Trophy winner. That's another option. So we'll see what happens. But like I said, to sum it up, offense needs some help rebuilding the offensive line, especially offensive line depth if there's injuries. You got the different options at quarterback, either free agency or the draft. Getting the talent and skill players, especially at the wide receiver position, another key factor. And then just, yeah, building overall depth with defensive special teams to be able to kind of survive any potential injuries and just to have that, say, third string linebacker who can contribute very well in the special teams unit. I said I was going to talk about Jonathan Kraft. And then I kind of thought about it as I was talking about just the other stuff in regards to the Belichick, Mayo, all that. And I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to think about the positives. I'm going to think about how great of a run Belichick had, how I'm excited for the run to come with Jerod Mayo, all that. I'm just going to worry about Robert Kraft being in power at the moment. And not when he decides to, if he decides to step down at some point, or if, unfortunately, the reality, if he passes away, I'm not going to worry about what it may be like with Jonathan Kraft as the owner or leader of this Patriots team. I could go into a conversation about nepotism and all that. But anyway, the peace-loving yoga enjoyer Spencer in me wants to just see the sunset and see the sunrise at this point. So, Hakuna Matata, namaste, don't worry, be happy. Super wild card weekend, 6 games over 3 days. It's going to be entertaining. Got some weather situations to deal with, so let's get into that a little bit. I'm just gonna kind of give my thoughts on some games here. You know, could we see some major upsets? Maybe. You have the 49ers in the NFC, the Ravens in the AFC awaiting whatever the lowest seed is in each conference. They'll come out and have to play those teams, the one seeds there. So starting off Saturday, 4:30, you got the Browns at the Texans, the 5-4 matchup in the AFC. This, to me, comes down to how CJ Stroud, who these teams did play each other a few weeks ago, But CJ Stroud, their star rookie quarterback, was not playing in the game. He was injured. He was out with a concussion. So this is about how CJ Stroud can handle the Buccaneers. Wow, not yet. The Browns defense, pass defense in particular. And I think the blend of Devin Singletary and their wide receiver options, yes, their receivers like Tank Dell, who's out for the season, they're missing some of those guys. But when you have Nico Collins, who's definitely a reliable wide receiver, and a veteran tight end like Dalton Schultz, CJ Stroud is going to be able to figure things out. The Texans put up 22 points with their backup quarterback Case Keenum last game against Cleveland. So, I think the Texans can return to that type of offensive performance and, in fact, be better than what they showed in Week 16. Now, with Cleveland, you have Joe Flacco, who joined the team on the practice squad after kind of just sitting on his couch, you know, watching the games on Sunday, spending time with his family, all that. And the Browns call him up because of the injury, the season-ending shoulder injury with Deshaun Watson, who they're paying a ton of money, which I still will never understand why they decided to pay him so much money. But anyway, so Flacco being basically the QB1 right now for the Cleveland Browns has basically given hope for this season, because they have a solid defense, special teams unit is decent too. Just the weapons on offense are pretty good. I mean, they're missing running back Nick Chubb, who was injured in week two of the season, but they have decent replacement options in Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt that allows them, just overall with the passing skills of Flacco and the ability to utilize the run game a little bit too, a solid offensive line, they've been able to sustain and be good enough to earn the 5-seed, get into the playoffs and play the Texans here. I think an underrated thing that could happen, because he hasn't had to do it a lot, but CJ Stroud can utilize his legs here. If you have these kind of, they call them coverage sacks. So basically the sack occurs because the coverage from the cornerbacks and safeties were so good against the opponent's wide receivers. So if that's in a situation, if they're in a situation where all the wide receivers are covered, CJ Stroud could very well use his legs, escape from the pocket, create some first down opportunities. And that's a way that Houston can move the ball down the field, keep their offense on the field, and cause the Browns to maybe falter on the defensive end. I gotta believe in the home team here, in the Texans. I know the Browns are a nice story with Joe Flacco. You kind of have to realize the opponents they've faced, not that strong. I mean, they did play the Jets, and the Jets defense is good, very good, above average. But given where they were in the season and the quarterback they were playing, not necessarily, I wouldn't say they were as motivated probably as some other teams who had a little bit more to play for. So I got to go with the Texans here. I think they're a slight underdog if we're talking spread and betting. I believe it's starting to come down. So it's starting to become closer to a pick 'em, but not quite to where the Texans are still probably going to be around, say, 1.5, 2.5 point underdog. A little surprising because, like I said, they are the home team, but Cleveland did have the better record in the regular season. But yeah, I gotta go with the Texans here. I think Flacco, the Texans have the ability to shut down the run, which would lead Flacco to pass the ball more. And yes, he's had a lot of success passing the ball, but that could also lead for more opportunities for him to turn the ball over. So that's what I'm looking for there. The Houston defense to take advantage of that, to where they're able to stifle the run and cause more pressure on Flacco here to make a mistake and throw an interception. So yeah, got to go with the Texans in this one. the next game on Saturday at, I don't know if it's 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:30. I'll just say 8 o'clock. Dolphins at Chiefs, and this is getting some acknowledgement because of the streaming services on. This is a Peacock exclusive, so NBC broadcast, but exclusively on their streaming platform. Honestly, a smart move by the NFL. I can't lie. You have the Swifties. You have that huge fan base because obviously you pretty much would have to be under a rock to not know that Taylor Swift is dating Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce. Not going to really get too much into that. But so you have that huge base of fans who are watching, say, Kelce, and just the fact that Taylor Swift's there, they're watching because of that. And that's a huge subscriber base. I don't know how many times I'm going to say huge or any type of synonym with that, but just the importance of the potential of the amount of subscribers that NBC could get on their streaming platform just because of this game and because of that new fan base of the Swifties. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what stats come out about that. Like I said, huge, massive, big, a lot of dollars, potentially. Going into the game, it is going to be cold. I don't know if snow is going to get involved. I guess if it's that cold, anything's possible. But when you have a team in Miami right now who's dealing with 60s at worst probably at this point, and you have to go to Kansas City where the real feel is going to be like negative 20 degrees, at least maybe. I think it could get down to like minus 30 in the real feel temperature with the wind chill and all that. And Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback, usually, if not every single time, struggles in cold temperature games. I don't care what weapons the Dolphins have. You could have Devon Achane, the star rookie out of Texas A&M, Raheem Mostert, who's a touchdown machine, Tyreek Hill, who just has unbelievable speed, one of the best receivers in the league, Jalen Waddle, one of the best wide receiver twos in the league. I don't care what weapons you have unless they are wide, wide open. I think Tua is just going to struggle. And that, going back to the run game, I think that's super important, because if the Chiefs can stifle the run, then I think that's going to cause Tua to make some errors in the passing game, and or at least be inconsistent to where he's just – his quick release is not finding the open receiver. He's going to be inaccurate. I really, really think this cold is going to impact the Dolphins more than the Chiefs. Now, if you look at the Chiefs, they haven't been great at home, but this is playoff time. I think everything shifts. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, the veterans on those team, Chris Jones on the defensive side of the ball. I think those guys are going to bring a different energy and be ready to go. The offensive side of the ball, like if the Chiefs are able to get it to Travis Kelce due to the injuries the Dolphins are dealing with on defense, if they can get it to Travis Kelce, have him start gaining momentum and returning back to himself, because he's definitely struggled. There's no doubt about that. And utilize Isaiah Pacheco, who is a physical runner. And I'm sure if the Chiefs can find success in the run, that and Pacheco's tough to tackle, that is going to wear on the Dolphins defense for sure. The Chiefs could be in a spot where they can control this game, even if they're not finding success with their wide receivers in the passing game. Thankfully for them, Rasheed Rice has ended up turning into a wide receiver number one, which is essential given how the Chiefs wide receivers have played this season with all the drops and miscues. So yeah, I mean, it's the spread is 3.5 4, depending on the sports book. I don't see the Chiefs losing this game. I just don't. I think the cold is going to be a real issue for the Dolphins. I understand the Chiefs have been struggling as well. They're not looking necessarily like a Super Bowl winning team, but you never know. Come playoff time, they could just flick on the switch. So I got a lean Chiefs here. I'm even more confident given the weather that you're going to see. On to Sunday's slate of Super Wild Card Weekend, and a game that's slightly warmer but is expected to see much more snow, I would say, based on what they're saying out in Western New York and what's scheduled to hit Buffalo and Orchard Park for the Bills game. So there's a big variance here. I'm pretty sure I saw something where, like, yeah, there could be a foot of snow. There could be like 3 feet of snow. We're not really sure yet. So I guess it's a game time decision on what weather's going to show up. Buffalo Bills are trying to get volunteer shovelers to clear out the snow of the stadium. So that's the type of weather you're expecting. There was rumors that this game could go to Cleveland. Obviously, that is not true. Everything seems to be status quo for the game to be in Buffalo Sunday, 1:00. So, yes, crazy and hectic. So you have the 6-seed Dolphins at the 3-seed Chiefs. That's going to be a cold game. Now you have the 7-seed Pittsburgh Steelers at the 2-seed Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills, a yo-yo roller coaster of a season for sure. Started out all right, decent, and then it really got rough to where they're at through 12 games at 6-6. And now they've won 5 straight. They've beaten some quality opponents in the Cowboys and the Dolphins. And now they've earned themselves. They won the AFC East. They're at the 2-seed. Now they're a legit Super Bowl contender because of that home field advantage. The biggest test would be if they have to play the 1-seed Baltimore in the AFC Championship game. That's going to be a big, big test. But we are not there yet. We are at Super Wild Card Weekend, and we're going to enjoy it. This weather, I feel like, is going to make this game closer or a complete toss-up. Not in terms of like, oh, I don't know who's going to win this game. I still think Buffalo should be able to pull it out, but it gives the Steelers a much better shot, in my opinion. You have Mason Rudolph at quarterback right now, who the Steelers are kind of just riding the hot hand. They had Kenny Pickett, who they drafted a couple years ago, but he dealt with was it shoulder or concussion? I don't know. He just had concussion problems, but I think this was more of like the arm or shoulder area. Anyway, Mason Rudolph is in there. He's technically the third string guy, because they went through Mitchell Trubisky. They were tired of that, so now you have him. And the Steelers need to, especially in these conditions, need to rely on the running game. And I think whether it's with Najee Harris or with Jaylen Warren, they have the ability to figure this out and be successful and efficient in the run game, which is going to be huge, because that keeps Josh Allen and the Bills off of the field. And frankly, I don't care what weather it is, Josh Allen could still be able to sling the football. I don't care if we got 65 mile an hour wind gust, I feel like Josh Allen could still complete a pass to a wide receiver or tight end, or heck, even a check down to a running back. That's just the strength of his arm and his arm talent. So what the Steelers need to do, yes, is really try to establish the run, get that going, really try to neutralize the game that way, to where, heck, maybe you force the Bills to be more pass happy, and given the conditions, you get Josh Allen to try to be a little too ambitious throwing it and make a mistake. So that's what you're looking at for the Steelers. Because if you're looking at point spread, the Bills are a 9 or 10 point favor. So they are supposed to win this game and win this game by a lot. But the total was set at something around low 40s. And now because of the weather and the news of all that, that line has dropped a ton. So the over-under is looking at, I want to say like 32 or 30 now. So almost a 10 point drop in what they're expecting the total to be. So a game like that, yes, the Bills could win 24-3 or nothing, and just move on easily. But I do give the Steelers hope because, like I said, because of the running game and because of those running backs. And now, defensively for Pittsburgh, TJ Watt is out because of the sprained MCL that he suffered against the Ravens last week. And it's not like the Steelers could rest because they're fighting for a playoff position. They had to play their guys against Baltimore. Really had no choice because, like I said, they're fighting for that playoff spot. So Buffalo could very well be successful in the running game there, or even with, in terms of pass protection with their offensive line, having TJ Watt, who can definitely get to the quarterback, not be there kind of takes away the pocket pressure that Josh Allen and the Bills may face, to where he can just chuck it around, like I said, regardless of the weather, and be successful. So I still think the Bills will advance, and based on what I'm saying, likely play the Chiefs in Buffalo for the divisional round. But there is, because of the weather and the snow and the cold and everything there, the Steelers could very well make this a very, very close game. Now, going to the 4 o'clock window on Sunday, you have the Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys. Good old two famous historic franchises facing off. But I see the Cowboys, the 2 seed in the NFC, being able to take care of the Packers, the 7 seed in the NFC. And that's because I just believe that Dallas is so good offensively, especially at home, to where it's going to be like a track meet, a shootout, whatever you want to call it, to where the Green Bay is just going to have to keep trying to catch up to Dallas, to where eventually Jordan Love, making his first playoff start as quarterback for the Packers, I think he is eventually going to crack under the pressure, make a mistake to where, say, he tries to throw a deep ball and it's just inaccurate or too deep and it gets picked off by the Cowboys secondary. That's where I can see the errors happening. Now, the Packers, they do have running back Aaron Jones. That could be key in keeping that run-pass mix going, making things unpredictable, because there is the potential for the Cowboys secondary to give up a big play. But if they know it's coming and they're able to, and they could play a safer coverage, I'll say, that's when you may run into issues to where they can kind of bait you into throwing interceptions. Now, Dallas, like I said, they prolific pass offense, especially at home with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. And then you also have other weapons such as Brandon Cooks, Michael Gallup, Jake Ferguson, the tight end, who can be very successful when it comes to yards after catch. So that's kind of what I'm thinking here, is that it's just going to be too overwhelming offensively coming from the Cowboys there, to where I don't think the Packers are going to be able to match it. I just don't trust the defense enough. It's a big task for cornerback Jair Alexander against CeeDee Lamb, if it happens to be a shadow coverage there. So, yeah, the Cowboys are floating around a touchdown favorite. That makes sense to me, and I think they win this game. They control this game too. Maybe utilize Tony Pollard there, and he could very well break out for a run that really puts a nail in the coffin in the game. So yeah, I gotta go Cowboys here. Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football. We'll start with Sunday Night Football, and the Los Angeles Rams, the sixth seed in the NFC, visiting the three seed Detroit Lions. And this is, I would say, probably the most interesting Super Wild Card weekend matchup, maybe because of the past that has happened between these two organizations, with the former Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford getting traded to the Rams and the former Rams quarterback Jared Goff getting traded to the Lions in that deal. And now this is I believe the second time these teams have played each other. A couple years ago, the Lions visited the Rams, and I think it was a pretty not a complete blowout, but the Rams controlled that game. And that's when the Lions they weren't the team that they are now quite yet at that point, because I think that was when they started this season like 0-11 or 0-13, whatever the heck it was. But anyway, so if you look at the trade, obviously it seems like the Rams have won it because they won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And now you're starting to see the Lions and that team come together, not necessarily just because of Jared Goff being the quarterback. Obviously, that's helpful. But just the team that Dan Campbell has built it's proven now that what he is doing is great for this team. And yeah, the results are showing. So in this game in particular, it's going to just be explosive play after explosive play, especially in the passing game. So it's really up to which team can try their best to reduce it. And in that case, you would think it's the Rams. The Rams will be able to do that because the explosive plays allowed by Detroit in the passing game, it's like almost four a game. An explosive play in terms of passing is allowing a play of 20 or more yards. So those are going to be happening a lot. And I think what Detroit can do to counter that is with their running game. Granted, Kyron Williams, running back for the Rams, very, very good, has definitely emerged this season, can do both running, pass catching, just a very, very good talent out of Notre Dame. So if the Lions can reduce that and really lead Stafford, kind of like what the Cowboys may do to Jordan Love and the Packers, if they can just make it so pass heavy to where that could eventually lead to a mistake or a turnover, that could lead to some quick points for the Lions offense, then that's where they could really exploit them. I want to think the Rams are going to get the upset win on the road, but I just think that because these offenses are so prolific that, and there's not really an answer on the defense other than really the Lions run defense. And on the offensive side, the Lions have great running backs in rookie Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama, and then a solid kind of bell cow back in David Montgomery. It's a perfect 1-2 punch for that offense. So I think the Lions will have the ability to control the game. So say they get out to like a 7-10 point lead, they could really utilize the run game and be able to get decent chunks, decent carries to where they could run the clock down. And yes, like I said, control the game. But it you could also have, as I kind of mentioned, the situation to where the Rams could go down the field and score in 2 or 3 minutes. They could put in a quick score just because of how vulnerable that Detroit secondary is. But just, I mean, as a fan, as someone who's going to be watching the game, this is going to be super entertaining. I just can't see it being a low scoring game. That just makes no sense to me, given especially how explosive these pass offenses can be. The good thing for Jared Goff, it's not like he's playing in Buffalo or playing in Kansas City. That would be a whole different thing. That would be a whole different environment to worry about for him, because he's one of those quarterbacks who struggles in cold weather or I don't know, ugly weather games, whatever you want to call it. But this is in Detroit. It's at Ford Field in the domed or roof stadium. So, I mean, fire away there. And like I said, this is going to be super close. Not really sure what's going to happen, but I want to say Detroit finally gets rid of those demons. And yes, Stafford beat them in the regular season back a couple years ago. The Rams got the Super Bowl, but something is telling me that the Lions are going to get this done. Maybe it's because they're playing at home and the Rams have to come to Detroit. But I gotta go with the Lions here. Now we go over to Monday Night Football, and this I hate to say it, but this game may have the chance to be the opposite of what Rams and Lions are. I have a feeling that the Eagles may just make this a super ugly football game. Just really, really try to control the clock and the management of the game right from the get-go. Try to utilize their running game, all of that. And that's because A.J. Brown, who I believe was declared out Saturday morning, you're going to have Devonta Smith as your number one wide receiver now. And then you're going to have, is Dallas Goedert playing right now? I think he is. But anyway, they're top tight end there. So they're somewhat limited in their pass catching weapons. I mean, you do have Julio Jones. Maybe he can show up. I mean, I know he's past his peak by far in the NFL, but he's a proven wide receiver for sure. Had a great game for the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. I obviously can't just pull up a stat line right now, but yeah, just so he has the ability to have these moments here and there, at least to be able to catch a touchdown pass in the end zone right now. So that's why I'm saying the Eagles should probably rely on their running backs like DeAndre Swift. Kenneth Gainwell is another running back who could emerge in the postseason there. He had a decent postseason last year on the Eagles' road to the Super Bowl. So that's what I'm thinking they do. And I know Tampa Bay's run defense is very stout. Like, it was uncharacteristic when these two teams played in week three this season, to where Swift had 16 carries, like 130 yards, like average 8 yards a carry. That's very uncharacteristic for a running back to do that against the Buccaneers defense this season. The problem is on the Buccaneers side for their running game, you have Rashad White, and Rashad White has been very useful. I think in terms of fantasy football, he's been very good, like a top five running back this year, just because of his pass catching ability. So maybe that's where you can have him be able to exploit the Eagles defense. So, but really for Tampa Bay, they need to be able to get the pass game going. That's where you can exploit the Eagles defense, is through their secondary. And you have great receivers to do it in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, guys who have been with the team for a little bit now, have caught passes from Tom Brady, obviously. Now they're catching passes from Baker Mayfield. The concern is that the Bucs offense hasn't been great. They've kind of been crawling to the playoffs, to get to the playoffs, a little bit lucky. Like, there was still an opportunity last week in week 18 to where the Saints could have made the playoffs, the Falcons could have won the NFC South and made the playoffs. So the Bucs avoided disaster, but seeing what they've done the past 2 weeks, last week they were playing the Panthers. So, like, you have to beat one of the worst team in football, and you only score 9 points, that's definitely concerning, especially as you're playing the Eagles here. And I know the secondary is rough, but that front seven, the defensive line, the linebackers, those are solid, solid players, and they have a lot of depth too, so they could keep on going, keep attacking throughout the game. And I hope the Eagles are able to scheme that way to make it a problem for Baker Mayfield. But I guess we'll have to see what happens there. But I understand the Eagles have struggled. I understand they've won one of their last six games in the regular season, and Tampa Bay has won five of their last six games to close out the regular season. But I just not this round. Maybe next weekend when the Eagles have to go play, say, at San Francisco, or maybe at Dallas if Dallas beats the Packers. That's where I see the vulnerability showing up. And even without AJ Brown, like I said, I just think the Philly are gonna try to control this game from the get-go, establish the run there, and that's where Tampa could be chasing, and that's where Baker could be starting to make mistakes. And that's probably going to lead to Tampa's downfall here. And it kind of stinks for the Tampa Bay fan base, because they could have back-to-back years where they not necessarily had the best record to where, but they still have one of those top four seeds because they won the division. But then an NFC East opponent comes in that's has a better record than them. Last year was the Cowboys, and knocking out the Bucks and Brady in the Super Wild Card round. And this year comes the Philadelphia Eagles, who I think will do the same thing. The spread for this game is close. It's only a field goal. Eagles are only a field goal favorite. You would think that's kind of absurd, but given just the trends of both of these teams, it does make sense. Tampa Bay isn't the home team. I mean, I guess you have to kind of honor that a little bit. But like I said, this is going to be – Eagles are going to try and make this an ugly football game. They're going to control it. I feel bad for Peyton Manning and Eli Manning doing the Manning cast, because this is going to probably be a boring game. Hopefully their interviews are pretty good, or the scheduled interviews are going to be good. We don't need anybody's dad doing magic tricks. So that was rough. But anyway, I gotta go Philly here. I can't go with the Bucs. That Philly's the only option here. So there it is. Super wild card weekend. I might have picked all the top seeds. The Texans, the Chiefs. I think Buffalo is able to squeak one out. Dallas should be able to win over the Packers. Lions in like a super close shootout type of game, though wouldn't be surprised at all if the Rams won. And then gotta go Philly here over Tampa Bay. I don't think it's this week for them.